For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt.
And I'm Bill Brenner.
You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for December 27th, 2006. In this special edition, Cert Security marks the end of 2006 with a look back on the top security interviews and discussions. This week, we'll bring you five of those interviews conducted by Cert Security's senior news writer, Bill Brenner. Next week, Cert Security site editor, Eric Parizeau, will bring you five more interviews. In this edition, we'll hear Oracle's Darius Wiles, who talked to the editorial team in July about the vendor's patching problems. We'll also take a look back at the Black Hat Conference, where Bill Brenner interviewed Spy Dynamics' Billy Hoffman about the growing dangers of Ajax applications. And in August, Cert Security brought you an interview with security luminary Dan Gear. Gear, who now works for Vertisys, discusses his infamous 2003 research paper that caused him to lose his previous job. In June, Cert Security also held a roundtable discussion where the topic was about the state of Microsoft security after Bill Gates. And finally, the state of zero-day threats and third-party patching was discussed in September with Randy Abrams of the Zero-Day Emergency Response Team. The first interview is Oracle's Darius Wiles, and he talked to the entire Cert Security team for 2.5 hours?
Yes, they did. A little backstory on this one. We have for a while done a lot of extensive coverage on Oracle's security procedures, particularly a lot of criticism that's been directed their way by Oracle security researchers and database administrators. Really, a lot of the criticisms have been that their security bulletins have been very difficult to decipher and digest, that they've offered too few details on the what the specific vulnerabilities were that they were patching, and also a lot of criticism that some of their fixes weren't working as advertised and that they were continuing to sit on other flaws that had been reported for a year or longer. And so they hadn't been very forthcoming about talking about those issues as we've reported on it. And we finally got them to come down and spend really a few hours with us to really talk about these questions and, you know, really give us the answers we'd been looking for. And so that... we went into the podcast room after this 2.5 hour hot seat session. So.
And that's what this clip is. Now, we should say that Oracle has since revamped its patch bulletins, right?
Yeah, they this fall, they put out, starting with their October critical patch update, they put out a streamlined bulletin, and what they do now is, at the top, they clearly tell you how many different flaws they are fixing. They offer a little bit more detail in the executive summaries as to what, at least, you know, what an attacker could do. So that is one example of how they've tried since our conversation to address some of the feedback they've been getting from customers and researchers.
Darius, welcome to Security Wire Weekly.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you, readers.
My first question is about Oracle's move in late 2004 toward a quarterly patching process. We've interviewed a lot of DBAs over time who have said that they approve of the cycle and that they like having a schedule where they know when things are coming. But there's still some concern out there that the process can be confusing and that flaws aren't always patched as advertised. Talk a bit about what Oracle has been trying to do to correct the process, specifically where some fixes aren't always complete across the board.
So the critical patch update scheme was a scheme that was put together in conjunction with customers. The objective was to meet their requirements for providing quality patches on a predictable schedule so that they could plan in downtime and testing time. Typically, it takes large customers between 3 and 6 months to test and apply Oracle security patches to their systems. So the objective of the critical patch update scheme is to meet the requirements of customers.
Do you ever have a problem where, you know, since you are trying to really put a lot of focus into the newer platforms, is there ever a case where maybe sales goals have undue influence on the priorities of what gets fixed first?
It's based on an objective assessment of the severity, the technical severity of the flaw. So we have an in-house risk calculator that in some respects is similar to the Common Vulnerability Scoring System, or CVSS. It looks at certain criteria, certain aspects of a vulnerability, with a view to coming up with a numerical score as to how severe the issue is. We use that as one of the inputs into deciding what to include in critical patch updates. But other inputs are the publicity of the vulnerability. Things that are already published on the internet are raised in the priority stakes. Vulnerabilities that are found outside the company have a higher priority because we believe that they potentially pose more risk to customers than issues that we find internally. In fact, we find about 75% of security vulnerabilities in-house, but it's the ones that are externally found that we're more focused on fixing quickly.
Okay, Bill, the next clip is Spy Dynamics' Billy Hoffman. And he talks a little bit about Ajax web applications and about how dangerous they are.
Yes. This was one of the, what I felt was one of the big issues at Black Hat. It wasn't necessarily one of the big headline grabbers, but I thought it was significant because he made the point that a lot of websites are being thrown together very quickly using Ajax technology. And, you know, Ajax allows you to do all kinds of great things with your website, but his point was that the adoption is far outpacing anybody's efforts to secure it, and that the damage you can do by exploiting Ajax flaws, Ajax-based flaws, are, you know, the damage you could do is pretty extensive. And so for me, I felt that that was one of the big warnings of the future, one of these things that if people aren't more careful about how they use Ajax, that it's you know, there are going to be some consequences. And so I thought it was one of the...
You said that, I think you said to me offline, that one of the main problems is that web application developers seem to be ignoring security when they're developing a web application.
Absolutely. That was one of the main points that that Hoffman was trying to make. And will people listen to him? Well, time will tell. But I thought it was one of the big sleeper issues of the conference. It really hadn't gotten a lot of coverage, but really is an important issue that we're going to see more of.
And here is Billy Hoffman.
Billy, welcome to Security Wire Weekly.
Fantastic, Bill. Thanks for having me.
What's the main message you wanted people to walk away with, particularly concerning Ajax?
Well, for one, the Gartner Group says that 70% of attacks these days are coming in through the application layer. So, you know, we've got firewalls, we've got IDSs, we've got great ways to protect people from hacking you at your lower layers. But you know what? If I want to steal your database, if I have to do all this stuff to circumvent your low-level security, or I can just break in through your website, I'm going to break in through your website. I'm going to take the path of least resistance. And I don't think a lot of people realize how websites are a really great way to get to back-end systems. You know, we're not doing a very good job with, you know, protecting websites now. With Ajax and some of these new Web 2.0 technologies, we're really just making it easier to break into our websites because there's more little finger holds, more ways I can actually talk to your app, and each one of those is another potential way I can get in. So the big theme is I can attack you now, and if you don't implement these new technologies properly, I can attack you with even greater chance of success.
Now, is the problem that developers of Ajax applications are getting sloppy and leaving security holes behind, or is it just that the attackers are simply getting better at exploiting it?
It's a combination of both. I mean, you know, MySpace was purchased by News Corp for almost $400 million. Delicious has been purchased. Writely.com, which is an Ajax-based word processor, was purchased by Google. A lot of people are seeing that there's money to be made in Web 2.0 apps. And so you have a lot of people who are saying, you know, hey, I used to write Windows programs. I know C#. I can start writing, you know, web apps. Not really understanding there are a lot of little nuances you've got to do to make your app secure. So we're kind of getting a lot of novices to the field who don't know how to properly secure the application. On top of that, our attackers are getting more sophisticated. We had the MySpace.com worm that hit in October of last year that was written by Sammy, which basically just, you know, kind of did a little mischief. It, you know, caused you to add someone to your friends list. You know, it wasn't evil per se. You know, it didn't do a lot of damage in terms of maliciously destroying data. But just in June of this year, we had the Yamanner worm, which hit Yahoo, their webmail portal. And it basically was another worm, like the MySpace worm, that would travel through all of the Yahoo mail users. And this was designed to steal steal email addresses so spammers could sell them. So we went from proof of concept to something that attackers are actually using in less than 8 months. So it's obvious our attackers are getting more sophisticated.
Great, Bill. Next is an interview that you conducted with Dan Geer. He is currently Vice President and Chief Scientist for security firm Vertisys. And he talks about an infamous research paper that he wrote in 2003 that caused him to lose his job. Can you explain?
Sure. About 3 years ago, he actually co-wrote a paper with some other researchers, and the argument of the paper was that the world was becoming much too dependent on Microsoft technology, and they compared Microsoft. They made this argument of Microsoft as the monoculture, where an ecosystem that has too much of one thing and not enough of other elements is basically a recipe for disaster. In the case of Microsoft, if everybody is relying on nothing but Microsoft technology and not enough diversity in the technology you have in your company's infrastructure or a government system infrastructure, that there are big dangers ahead if there's a big attack. And he was fired from At Stake over this. The general assumption is that, you know, At Stake had a relationship with Microsoft and he wasn't towing the company line. But it turned him into a hero of sorts in the information security community. So when we started this interview, I started out by really asking him, you know, do you think this is this not the best thing that ever happened to you, or what, in hindsight? And he pretty much acknowledged that it was, but he also went further back and mentioned how, you know, really the lucky thing going back to the beginning of his career was that he had a job where, because he didn't have the physique, he wasn't manly enough, as he put it, they stuck him in this computer room. Well, you know, while the stronger guys were out on the plantation all day, you know, spraying chemicals around and whatnot. And he's talking about how, well, the real manly men were shooting leaves off of trees. He was in this computer room really getting his start of, you know, mastering technology. And I thought it was a very funny piece of the interview, one of my favorite parts.
Here is Dan Gear.
Dan, first off, we have to talk about the Microsoft paper because you were, of course, famously fired as CTO of AtStake the same day the paper was released, and you reportedly found out about it through a press release. So my first question is, did that incident turn out to be the best thing that ever happened to your career? And if you had to do it again, would you do anything differently?
I wouldn't do anything differently, I don't think. It. In terms of the best thing, honestly, the best thing that ever happened to me, and this goes back a long way, was I worked in a paper mill, and because I didn't have the physique of a real man, they stuck me in the computer room where I ran card sorters and things like that. That was a long time ago, but that's how I got my start. Because I wasn't a real man. The guys who were real men, the members of the high school football team, were paid three times what I was paid, but they strapped a tank of Agent Orange on their back and went out and killed broadleaf trees in the plantation all day.
Great, Bill. We have two more to go, and the next one is a roundtable discussion conducted in June, and the news of the time was Microsoft's Bill Gates.
Yeah, Bill Gates had just announced that he was going to start pulling back from the day-to-day operation and focus more on his charitable work and, you know, have other people in Microsoft step up on the day-to-day side of things. And so the reason I wanted to include this roundtable discussion is one of the things that I'm particularly happy about with these is that we've been focusing on putting IT professionals on these panels as opposed to vendors, and really having them talk about how the news affects them as, you know, and their lives in the trenches every day trying to secure their networks. And the consensus from everybody really was that their lives weren't going to change much with Gates moving on to other things, and, you know, really took a very big news story and brought it down to, you know, as far down to the level of the people we're writing for as you could get. We had Keith Gosselin, and he's the IT manager for a bank in Maine. And we also had Jeremy Martin, and he is a penetration tester. So what he does is companies pay him to basically find their security holes and try to attack them so they can fix the problems. And then finally we had Natalie Lambert, and she is an analyst with Forrester Research.
Well, let me ask you, Jeremy, and anyone else who wants to chime in on this after can do so, certainly. Do you buy into the notion that a senior executive can have a major influence on a vendor's security offerings, or is it really the case that the real changes come more often from the lower-level people working with customers?
There's always the issue to where the senior-level execs do have a major influence on the vendor security offerings. Business does follow money, and senior execs usually have most influence because they have the most purchasing power. However, the voice of the customer is pretty strong also. If Microsoft stays with the current flow, Microsoft should not be hurt by the security structure that they're going through.
Keith, let me ask you, as somebody with Windows machines in the environment, has Microsoft's efforts in the past few years improved security at your company, and are you having any concerns about a future Microsoft without Gates?
I certainly think that all the things that Microsoft has done over the last couple of years, especially the Windows 2003 environment, has significantly increased security here at our bank. Gates leaving, I'm not really sure, is going to hurt their security offerings too much or railroad anything that may be happening there. I do have a little bit of concern with his leaving that it's going to slow down the innovation and new products coming out in the future, just because I think he was a driving force behind a lot of that.
Natalie, is...
I mean, I do believe that they have a very solid roadmap ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
With basically, they recognize that they are entering this market behind, and that the only way to really be able to compete with the likes of McAfee and Symantec or are to be able to offer a competitive solution, which at this point they don't have. So I think that regardless, in order for them to be able to gain market share, they're going to have to come out with a more solid product, which means that they are, I don't think they can slow down the security roadmap for these products. If anything, they're really going to have to increase it, for that matter.
And finally, we have an interview conducted with Randy Abrams about Zero Day. Randy is with the Zero Day Emergency Response Team, ZERT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought this was important to include because one of the major stories we've been covering all year is the unbelievable proliferation of Zero Day flaws and attacks. And one of the things that has happened, and this started back in January, is that various organizations started to put out their own third-party patches for those who didn't want to wait for an official patch from Microsoft. Here was this organization, ZERT, really dedicated towards, one of their missions has been to offer these alternative fixes. And so I felt it was important to have them come on and really answer the questions raised by the other side who feel that it's dangerous to do this sort of thing.
And here is Randy Abrams in September.
Randy, I've interviewed some IT professionals over time who don't believe in third-party patches because they believe such fixes can actually introduce more flaws to the network. ZERT obviously has a different view. I'm wondering if you can talk about it.
Well, sure. It is possible for a third-party patch to cause a lot of problem, and ZERT members are aware of that and actually issued the patch with the warning that the patch is as is and you should do testing and provided source code. The ZERT patch really is intended for some pretty advanced users and should only really be used when the manufacturer's workarounds are not tenable for your organization. In this case, Microsoft had a pretty robust workaround, but there are some users that needed the functionality of VML, and for them, that's where the patch was appropriate. If you don't know anything about the party that's providing the patch or any software that you're running, then we have a word for you in the security industry, and that's called victim. So it's important that you always know who you're getting your software from.
And that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Next week, CERT Security Site Editor Eric Parizeau will share his picks for top interviews of 2006. You could check out the full interviews featured in this edition at our podcast page at certsecurity.com/podcast. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. From myself and the rest of the CertSecurity.com team, have a happy and safe new year.